taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. I'm glad you could join me today. Join me here so we can read, we can study the Constitution, we can teach the rising generation to be free, we can teach ourselves to be free, maybe we can even teach our neighbors to be free. You know, in looking around recently, I'm more and more convinced that the pieces of paper we carry around in our pocket, the ones and zeros that travel around on our credit cards and our bank statements, well, it truly is just Monopoly money. Now, all of us have played Monopoly, I'm pretty sure. And you've got this fake money. That's pretty much what the American dollar has become. This isn't new. This has been true for a long time. But it seems over the last few years, the government in Washington, D.C., the Federal Reserve, they've trashed money to the point of it means nothing. I read an article a while back, and it looked at the price of an average home in America in dollars and in gold. And while a house is much, much more expensive in dollars, in gold it's worth just about the same. What does that mean? That means your house hasn't gotten more valuable. It means your dollar is less valuable. Now, this goes all the way back to things like the Federal Reserve and going off the gold standard, but just some truly, well, if it was anybody else, criminal activity going on through the government and quasi-governmental agencies. So let's start with what should be a sad milestone. Our national debt tops $30 trillion. Now, I know people they don't deal well with very large numbers or very small numbers. So let me see if I can put some perspective to that. Now, with the assumption there are roughly 330 million Americans, that means each American owes about $91,000 each and every one. I want you to think about that for a moment. If you have a newborn, that baby is born with over $90,000 in debt. Now, if you look at the number of taxpayers, according to the IRS, there were just shy of 155 million tax returns filed last year, which means that the average taxpayer owes $194,000 just to pay off the national debt. Now, all right, those are numbers. Is there a better way to put this into perspective? Well, I found this interesting article. A dollar bill is 0.0043 inches thick. You can take one out of your pocket, look at it. A one-inch pile of dollar bills is worth $233. A 1 foot stack of dollar bills is worth $2,790. A 1 mile stack of dollar bills is $14,734,884. All right, follow me so far. The average distance between the Earth and the Moon is 238,857 miles. So think how much, if you were to stack dollar bills from here, from the Earth to the Moon, at its average distance, how much would that be? That would be $3.5 trillion. We are over 30 trillion dollars. That means you could stack 8 stacks of $1 bills from the Earth to the moon and still have enough to get halfway there again. That's a lot of money. $30 trillion. Now, the problem, part of the reason we're in such a mess comes from the fact that, well, see, we the people refuse to hold our elected officials accountable. See, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 2 of the Constitution gives Congress the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. But it places no limitation on that. Now, I believe there were two reasons. I believe one reason is our founding fathers thought the American people were smart enough to not hire people that would borrow money profligately. They were wrong. But the other problem is we don't hold them accountable to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, which says that Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. In other words, Congress is really only authorized to spend money on 3 things: to pay the debt, to provide for the common defense, and the general welfare of the Union called the United States. Not the welfare of the states, not the welfare of the citizens, not the welfare of the people. The welfare of the Union called the United States. In other words, the welfare of the government. For example, Congress is authorized to, well, coin money. Well, someone's got to pay to get that money coined, right? We have courts to deal with controversy. Someone's got to pay for those, right? Someone's got to pay the president. Someone's got to pay Congress. Congress has the authority to legislate what is now called Washington, D.C., for needful buildings, for forts and magazines. Someone's got to pay for that. That is the general welfare of the United States. But we turn that into, well, the general welfare of whatever Congress seems to think is a good idea. So we've taken a limited power of Congress. We've allowed them to turn it into a general power of Congress. We've allowed them to bribe us with our own money. And since there was no limit on their borrowing of money, there's nothing to stop them from spending us into oblivion. But it gets even worse than that, because Congress has made up some really interesting laws. Now, I'm not a financial expert. I have never worked in the banking industry. But what I've read and studied and heard, there are really 2 things that are, well, again, if anyone else did it, it would be criminal. Now, when I was growing up, I was told it's a good thing to keep your money in the bank, right? You open a savings account. When you put money in the bank uses that money. It loans it out to other people so that they can do things like run businesses or buy homes or cars or whatever. That was the way I was told it worked. Except at some point we started what's called fractional reserve banking. And fractional reserve banking works something like this. So let's say your son, your daughter, gets a nice, crisp $10 bill for their birthday. And you convince them to put that in the bank because, well, that's the right thing to do, right? So you open a savings account and your child gives them $10 and the bank says, thank you very much, we'll take care of this for you. But because of fractional reserve banking, the bank doesn't have $10 to loan out. It has $100 to loan out. Right? So for every dollar we put in the bank, $100 gets spent. It's this mentality of we can just borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow because you only need a fraction of actual money to cover what's actually being borrowed. If a bank can lend $10 for every dollar they have on deposit, we have a very credit happy society. In fact, I remember many, many years ago, going to buy a car, and I had made arrangements to get a car loan. I was in a credit union. They gave me a very favorable rate. By the way, I don't use car loans anymore. I learned my lesson, but I had a car. I walked into a dealership. I looked at a couple of cars. My wife was with me, looked at cars. They took a look at my car for a trade-in, and I told them, I says, listen, I have a loan already set aside. So I don't want to talk payment. I want to know the price of the car. The salesperson goes back. They come back out. I can put you in that car for X amount of month. I didn't ask you what a payment plan was. I want the price of the car. Well, I don't know. Think about how many people make decisions based not on the price of something, but on the payment plan. So we have this borrowing mentality. But there's one other, even worse. This is truly criminal. So how does the federal government borrow $30 trillion? Well, they issue bonds, right? Which is basically, it's a promissory note. Well, do you really think people are buying $30 trillion worth of government bonds, federal government bonds? Yeah, we Americans buy some, right? We get savings bonds, and some people invest in federal bonds, and there are other countries that invest and that buy up federal bonds, yep. But as I understand it, you know where most of that money comes from? The Federal Reserve. See, the Federal Reserve makes a deal with the federal government, with the U.S. Treasury, and says, listen, Treasury says, yes, we're going to issue a few $1 billion in bonds. The Federal Reserve says, well, we'll buy it, except the Federal Reserve doesn't have any money to buy it. It just goes into a little computer program and says, we're just going to add a few $1 billion to our balance sheet. We're going to create money out of thin air, use that to buy the bonds so that the federal government has money to spend. Just imagine going to your bank. You get a letter from the bank saying, you've overdrawn your account. Oh, that's okay. Just go put some more zeros in there. It'll be fine. No, sir. You have to actually deposit money. Oh, no, I don't. The Federal Reserve doesn't deposit money. They don't actually have money they put in the accounts. They simply make it up out of thin air. Why can't I? Those laws were put in place by the people that represent us and that represent our states. Our employees in government created a system where they could effectively make money out of thin air. Now, granted, it makes the money effectively worthless. It's nothing but ink on paper. But we have a $30 trillion debt because the Congress figured out that they could bribe us with our own money. The entire federal government figured it out. All we got to do is offer them money. If they're unhappy, we'll throw money at them. You want phones? Here, we'll give you money for phones. You want food stamps? We'll give you money for food. Oh, you want a subsidy for this crop? We'll give you that. You want a subsidy for oil? We'll give you that. Oh, do you want to set up a national monument? We'll give you money for that. Oh, we shut everything. The government shut everything down so you can't work. We'll give you money for that. Can't pay your rent? We'll give you money for that. And we'll just bribe the American people into subservience. And since they don't need to actually collect the taxes right away, they can just borrow fictitious money from the Federal Reserve. It's a scam. If any private entity tried anything like this, it would make Bernie Madoff, Enron, the housing crisis, chicken feed, amateur hour compared to what the federal government does each and every day. It's monopoly money. Now, I remember one cartoon always stuck with me. It was a character that referred to the IRS as the Infernal Revenue Service. That one always stuck with me. So guess what? The IRS says, you know what? We want to use facial recognition to view tax returns. This is what they were going to put in place. They were going to partner with a private company to use facial recognition in order for you to access your data, your tax return. And of course, they're doing it through a company called ID.me. And of course, they have in their privacy bill of rights that they don't sell, loan, trade, any biometric data. They're pure as the wind-driven snow. And if you believe that, I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. But you really want the federal government to have access to your facial ID, your biometric data. Well, needless to say, this created just a bit of a firestorm. People were not really happy with that. So the IRS did eventually back away. They said they're not going to use third-party facial recognition technology after the backlash they got. Doesn't mean they're not going to try it again. But think about this. The IRS thought, you know what? We can use biometric data and we can use a third party to do it. And we can effectively force the 155 million U.S. taxpayers to drive business to ID and me, to give them biometric data. Now, but Paul, they're not going to charge you for that, right? Well, there's an old adage, or not that old adage, there's an adage become quite common in the IT industry. If you don't pay for the service, you are the service. Do you honestly believe that the IRS and ID.me would not make all of that data available to somebody else? Say, oh, I don't know, the FBI or ATF. Or the U.S. Capitol Police. Imagine going to Washington, D.C. to visit the monuments or going to visit your house rep and having your face scanned as you come near the Capitol complex, have it run against a database, among other things, your tax returns, and say, oh, there's Mr. Smith. Oh, by the way, Mr. Smith has an outstanding tax bill. Do you really think that wouldn't happen? You're talking about giving the federal government assuming power to collect biometric data. Just think of the worst way it could be used, and odds are one day it will be. Again, thankfully, that day is not today. But it's not because the IRS suddenly grew a conscience. It's not because the people at the IRS suddenly said, you know what, maybe that's not such a bad idea, good idea. Maybe we should not do this. Maybe there's a privacy issue. No, it's because they got a public spanking. It's because politicians, media, and plain old ordinary citizens said, oh, heck no. It's the power of numbers. It's the willingness to go with your neighbor and stand up against bad actors. It's not the individual who stands up that gets something done. It's when it's done en masse. It's why I say, you know, we need to know our rights. We need to know how to defend and assert them. But it's more important that we protect other people's rights. You see, if I protect your rights and your neighbor's rights and their neighbor's rights, then we have a shield to help defend ourselves. If I protect my rights, all I'm doing is protecting myself. If I protect other people's rights, we now have numbers. It's one of the reasons I say, if you're going to stand up against a tyranny, don't do it alone. You want people to participate with you. Because it was the IRS didn't change its mind because a person complained. They changed their mind because they got spanked in public for what they were trying to do. So when the IRS Commissioner Chuck Rittig said, the IRS takes taxpayer privacy and security seriously, and we understand the concerns that have been raised. You take it seriously now because the concerns got raised. Now, who knows? For all I know, the IRS was raising a flag. You know, run up the flagpole, see how bad people scream. So when he says that everyone should feel comfortable with how their personal information is secured, no, everyone has a right for their personal data to be secured, their personal information to be secured. And since we, the people, did not delegate to the United States the ability to track our biometric data, they don't have that right. They don't have that power. This was an attempted theft. Theft of power. Theft of your biometric data. Oh, sure, it was sold. It'll be more secure. It'll make it easier for you. You know, all you have to do is show your face to a camera. You don't have to deal with IDs and passwords and all that stuff. And it'll be so much better. No. Because A, you have no right to that data. B, you certainly don't have the right to share that data with a third party, namely ID.me. So I'd say we dodged a bullet, but that bullet is still in the gun. See, there's nothing that can't say in a few years that the IRS doesn't pull this rabbit out of the hat again and try again to collect biometric data. And as I said, if you expect the IRS to keep this private, I have a bridge to sell you. Tell me, when has the federal government kept anything private? Tell me the IRS wouldn't share this with other organizations in the federal government. They've already agreed to share it with a third party. We need to stand up and defend our rights. Because if we don't, who will? And oh, by the way, if you hadn't heard about this, or if you heard about it but just didn't do anything about it, you should thank your lucky stars for the millions of Americans who stood up and said, oh no, because they protected your rights. You owe them a debt of gratitude. So when the next one of these pops up, you should join in the chorus. You should stand for their rights. You should protect their rights, because otherwise we end up with what I like to call the Martin Niemöller situation. See, he wrote this, I believe it was during World War II. He said, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Well, then they came for the trade unionist, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. See, if we don't protect the rights of others, there will be no one there to protect your rights when they are under threat. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I brought this story. It is why I believe this story is so important. Not because the IRS wanted to collect data they weren't legally allowed to. That's normal. Not because, you know, the government was going to collect data it wasn't entitled to. They do it every 10 years with the census. Not because they were going to share personal data with a third party. No. Because it's important that we stand up. And if you notice, it was the backlash. It was the pushback. It was the people saying no that convinced the IRS that maybe we should back off of this. That's what's important to me in this story. It's that some of the people stood up Sure, there were politicians and there were media people, but it's important that the people stood up, pushed back, and protected their rights and the rights of their neighbor. Now, I have to head off to a break. Before I do, please check out a couple things. ConstitutionStudy.com. I am putting together a new tour for 2022. I'm going to do an extension of the Knowing Your Rights tour, but I'm also going to add some other material for some other places. Just go to ConstitutionStudy.com/tour. Find out about the Knowing Your Rights tour. It's where I help people understand some of the most basic concepts of the importance of knowing your rights and how to defend and assert them. Now, as I add venues, I'm still working on them, they will appear on that page. But if you'd like me to come speak to you or your group or at your event or come to one of your conferences, there's a form right there you can fill out that will, you know, let me know where and when, and we'll see if we can make it happen. I'm trying very hard to get to as many places as I can this year. So again, that's constitutionstudy.com/tour. Fill out the form if you'd like me to come speak, and we'll see if we can make it happen. I don't charge to come to events unless it is a for-profit event. In other words, if someone is, you know, if you've got a concert going on and you want me to speak at that and you're charging for tickets, then generally I ask for a fee. But most of these events I don't charge for. I'm basically looking to get my hotel and meals and travel covered. But check that out. Again, it's constitutionstudy.com/tour. Also, please head over to healthycell.com. You know, life is getting strange. You know, I'm preparing to head out on the road, and I've been a road warrior of one form or another for better part of 30 years. And the one thing that is almost common during that time is when you spend a lot of time on the road, you tend to come home with some form of crud. You know, today everything's COVID, but sometimes you come back with a bug or something. The best way to prevent that is to support your immune system. Now, one of these ways you can do that is via Healthy Cells Immune Super Boost. It is designed to support your immune system, to give your body what it naturally has to fight off all of those illnesses, all the viruses, the bacteria, the bugs, everything. And it all comes in a simple travel-ready gel pack. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. So if you, like me, if you use Immune Super Boost to help support your immune system, go to healthycell.com, try that, try any of their formulas, but just make sure you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, and you'll get 20% off your first order. So again, give that a try. Try any of their formulas. Just make sure you use that code OUTLOUD at checkout to get 20% off your first order.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep. Stay asleep. sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Dr. Vladimir Zelenko knows a thing or two about the immune system. He was nominated for a Nobel Prize for his early COVID-19 treatments, and now he's offering his Z-Stack supplements to our listeners at a discount. Just go to zstacklife.com/freedom. That's zstacklife.com/freedom.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. And today we're talking about funny money, monopoly money. You know, that stuff that the federal government uses to bribe us with our own fake money. You know, we talked about the national debt and in many ways how we got to the national debt, just how bad the national debt is, and well, the fact that we let Congress do it. We talked about the IRS wanting your biometric data and then realizing that I don't think people will settle for that and backing down. So next I want to talk about something. I've heard this before. It's been proposed in the United States. It's been proposed globally. There's a proposal at the World Economic Forum for a global wealth tax. Now, there's a couple things I want to point out with this. Again, this has been pushed around for years. It's always tax the rich, tax the rich. How can we take more money from somebody else? That's the way it always works, right? It's never you that's going to get the taxes. No, somebody else needs to pay the taxes. That's human nature. But let's start just a couple of things that I want to point out, which I'm sure the ne'er-do-wells in Congress and in our federal government didn't think of. And that is first that, you see, Congress has the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, to pay the debts of the United States, to provide for the common defense of the United States, and for the general welfare of the United States, not for the globe. And I know that's not exactly what they're talking about. But the problem they have is, you see, you have to understand, people are inherently greedy. I know we don't like to think of ourselves that way, but for the most part, we're greedy. We want someone else to pay for something. And the other part of that is, well, we want to avoid paying for stuff if we don't have to. Now, we've seen this in the U.S. for years. In 2020, the 2020 census, California's population decreased for the first time in recorded history, if memory serves. California lost a representative in the House. New York lost a rep. Why? People are leaving. Now, there are two reasons why people are leaving. One is the onerous regulation. The other is the high taxes. You know, it's amazing. You get parts of Florida and large percent of the population are former New Yorkers, retired New Yorkers, where they just want to get away from the taxes. See, that's what happens. People avoid paying taxes. So if you have two states and one of them has high taxes, one of them has low taxes, people are going to tend to leave the high tax state and head for the low tax state. Well, for example, most of my life I lived in New York, but right near the Massachusetts border. Why is that important? Well, at that point, the tax we paid in New York was 8%. The tax we paid in Massachusetts was 5%. So if there's stuff we could buy of any value that, you know, we could buy in Massachusetts rather than in New York, you do it. We bought clothes in Massachusetts. We bought a lot of things in Massachusetts. We'd go to if the same store existed in New York and Massachusetts, we'd often go to Massachusetts just to save on the sales tax. It's human nature. Now, if people are willing to move state to state or even northeast to southeast to avoid taxes, what do you think happens with countries when they have different taxing? So, yeah, you know, you go to, you know, if you're in the EU, you may find a state, a country that has lower taxes, and people tend to move there. They tend to move their businesses there. They're trying to avoid taxes. Well, what do we do about that? See, what happens is these high tax countries or people who believe that everybody should be paying high taxes, well, they don't want people to have the option of going somewhere else. In other words, they want to deny you the freedom of telling a country your taxes are too high. And they do that by getting everybody to agree to a same tax structure. But you see, the United States doesn't have the authority to tax you, to establish a tax, simply because the world does it. You see, first of all, there'd have to be a treaty. And that treaty, in order for it to be binding on the U.S., would have to be with the advice and consent of the Senate. And as screwy as the Senate is right now, I don't know that there are not at least, 40 senators that believe a global wealth tax is a bad idea. But let's put that aside. So whether or not you could sign a treaty to implement this, that treaty would be null and void in the United States. You see, the federal government is not allowed to directly tax the people on wealth. Congress can lay and collect taxes, but the only direct taxes that Congress can collect are on income, not wealth, which means those direct taxes would have to be apportioned to the states. The states would have to collect it and pass it on. I don't know about you, but if anybody in the state of Tennessee, where I currently live, tries to collect a wealth tax, I don't think they'll hold that position very long. A wealth tax, I know. Who is it? Elizabeth Warren is often talking about implementing a wealth tax. But again, you've got this little thing called the Constitution. And it's one of the reasons why I say the American people need to be aware of these things. You see, Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3, it says, representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union according to their respective numbers. Now, here's where things get a little interesting, and it's just a momentary sidebar. It goes on to say, which shall be determined by adding the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding any is not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. The infamous 3/5 clause that's often misrepresented. The 3/5 clause was effectively overturned with the 14th Amendment. Section 2 says representatives and shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state, excluding Indians not taxed. Doesn't say anything about taxes, by the way. So direct taxes are to be apportioned to the states based on their population. A wealth tax is a direct tax. Now, the one exception for the direct taxes comes from the 16th Amendment, which says the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. A wealth tax is not income. It's a tax on money you already have. So, again, not constitutional. Now, it's interesting because what they want to do is they want to have a graduated wealth tax. They want to tax 2% of individuals with more than $5 million, 3% worth more than 50, 5% worth more than a billion. Notice it doesn't say income, it says worth. Global wealth taxes are a really bad idea. It's literally eating the seed corn. But again, in the United States, it's also illegal to have a wealth tax, global or otherwise. Now, I've had this discussion with a lot of people. Do you really think the members of Congress who currently disregard the Constitution just about every day are going to worry about this? Because I haven't heard a lot of people in Congress complaining, excuse me, we're not allowed to tax wealth. Not just about the global wealth tax, but about the others. It's rare that you hear someone stand up and say, excuse me, it's unconstitutional to collect a wealth tax. It is a direct tax. It is not based on income. Therefore, the only way the federal government to do it is actually to collect it from the states. And I like that idea, right? Let the states stand up and say, no, we're not paying you a stupid wealth tax. That's ignorant. That's stupid. And let's leave it at that. Now, how do we deal with this funny money? How do we deal with the fact that the dollar bills in your pocket are just promissory notes that the government will actually honor them? And this very same government, by the way, that's debasing the value of those dollars every day. How do we deal with that? Well, one of the ways, there are several states that are looking at implementing gold and or silver as money. Now, many of you may say, wait a second, the states aren't allowed to make money. Article 1, Section 10 says that no state shall, among other things, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. In fact, actually, if you read that in English, it says you can't use dollars as tender in payment of debts. The states can't use anything but gold or silver. Now, the reason that this caught my eye is Tennessee has taken a step toward treating gold and silver as money. Tennessee is joining several other states that are doing similar things. And they're doing it for a couple of reasons. Part of it is to give their citizens a place to park money that is not subject to the federal government abuse, that is not subject to their debasement. So as I mentioned before, gold holds its value. Dollars don't. And since states are constitutionally authorized to use both gold and silver as money, you have states at different points in the process of treating gold and silver as money. Tennessee has taken one step, the first step. They've introduced a bill into the House and the Senate that would exempt certain coins and currency and bullion from a sales tax. See, in order to be effectively used as money, you can't have it as a sales tax. If I give you an ounce of gold, if you come and we trade, you give me you give me some dollars and I give you an ounce of gold. In Tennessee today, that's considered a sale and that's taxable. It's a sales tax. However, if gold or silver or platinum or palladium or any of these precious metals is exchanged, if we're dealing with two forms of money, in other words, if you give me, say, five $1 bills for a $5 bill, that's an exchange. If I give you some pesos or some euros or some yuan and you give me dollars, that's not considered a sale, that's considered an exchange. So if, in Tennessee, they pass these bills, HB 1874 and SB 1857, then that would exempt certain coins, currency, and bullion from the state sales tax. Now, what's interesting is the product must be made in whole or in part of gold, silver, platinum, palladium, or other precious metals and used solely as legal tender security or commodity in Tennessee or another state. It's the first step. States have investigated setting up gold and silver depositories where you could keep your gold, kind of like a bank. Now, it'd be interesting is if these depositories would begin issuing honoring checks or issuing debit cards, it breaks the monopoly the federal government has on the financial system. Because now, within a state, you want to do business and you don't want to involve dollars, you don't have to. You don't want to involve the federal government because it remains within the state. It's not interstate commerce. Well, then you'd have a method of doing that. So I find this as an interesting step. And they're moving very slowly. There are several states doing this, but they're moving very slowly. Kind of like that idea from the standpoint of rather than just jumping willy-nilly into something, I do wish it would move faster because what we're seeing with this inflation is, to me, not so much the increase in value of the products and services we're buying, but the decrease in the value of the dollar. And I only see it getting worse. Now, before I close out, I got a couple other things I want to hit that aren't strictly funny money. But they are examples of governments abusing their position. And in some cases, in direct contradiction to the Constitution and laws of their state and of the United States. So let's start in the Pacific Northwest, the state of Washington. Governor Inslee is pushing a bill that would criminalize complaining about election fraud. Now, there are some interesting twists on this, as I understand it. See, under Inslee's bill, loudly complaining about election fraud that the accused complainers knew was bogus, at least as adjudicated by a jury, could lead to violence. So therefore, the person who uttered those words should go to jail. Now, I have some problems with this. First of all, did someone who, if the basis is what a person knew and doesn't know, now you're reading people's minds. I know people who know the earth is flat. I know people who know we didn't go to the moon. I know people who know that a cloth mask stops COVID-19. It shouldn't be a standard of no. But the further problem is, where does a state get off determining whether or not someone's complaint is loud and whether or not it is adjudged by a jury as whether or not they knew it was false? And this other thing is, could lead for violence. So let's take, for example, you believe the 2020 election was stolen, that President Biden did not win, that President Trump did win, and you complain loudly. You're in the media, you're in the state house, you're complaining about the Zuckerbucks and the fraud and ballot trafficking and all of these things, and you get charged. You're getting charged for speech. No harm has yet been done. You're being charged for speech. And a jury says, well, that you should have known better. And they say you knew ahead of time. Then he says, well, this could lead to violence. Not that it did lead to violence, but now you are being punished for what someone else does. This is the irrational nonsense. This is the logic that says we sue Ford for someone driving drunk. If someone else commits a crime, punish the criminal, not the person expressing their free speech. But you see, this is what happens. This is what so much of the progressive movement is about. It's we need to control what people say. We need to control what people think. We cannot allow contradictory information. This is just another method of doing that. And oh, by the way, It is in direct violation of Article 1, Section 5 of the Washington Constitution, which says every person may freely speak, write, and publish on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right. If my information on Inslee's bill is correct, it's not the person abusing that they want to punish. It's not that they've abused the right to free speech. It's that someone else may abuse may do something criminal in response to a person's free speech. Now, this would be interesting. So are you telling me that if you have a protest about the election, let's say you get a bunch of truckers to show up and demonstrate about the election, and somebody thinks, you know what, we really dislike that, and assaults one of the protesting truckers. Is that the type of violence you're talking about, Governor? No. This is suppression of free speech. Plain and simple. If someone actually incites to riot, meaning somebody actually tells people they should go out and commit violence, that is already a crime. Punish it. If somebody takes the words of someone else and uses that to commit violence, punish the lawbreaker. But this is simply punishing the thoughts and opinions of people the government doesn't agree with. And if we go from the West Coast to the East Coast, because in Georgia, you have a physician who faces losing his medical license because he disagreed with the political narrative. Dr. William Ray Lynch Jr. made several comments about the COVID, quote-unquote, vaccines and masks at the Cherokee County School Board meeting back on August 19th of 2021. He presented scientific reports regarding the lack of scientific data that's to support mask mandates, and how the COVID quote-unquote vaccines need complete FDA approval and should not be mandated by government or Board of Education. Then on Christmas Eve, he received a letter from the American Board of Emergency Medicine regarding a complaint made against him. See, someone had complained he had violated a code of professionalism. The accusation was that the public statements were contrary to prevailing medical evidence, constitute unprofessional conduct, and may be subject to review by the American Board of Emergency Medicine Organization. In other words, now understand, he made a statement, he issued an opinion, but he presented scientific reports, data, facts. But you see, it was not with the prevailing medical evidence. What evidence? He's presenting evidence. No. It's not the prevailing medical propaganda. He was not on board with the propaganda. Therefore, his license is now being threatened. Somebody complained, and the board is now reviewing and threatening his license for giving scientific data to a school about the mask and vaccine mandates. This is being done by a board, but you see, the state of Georgia requires that the person hold a board certification in order to practice medicine. So if the American Board of Emergency Medicine wants to do this, all Georgia has to do is say, okay, you don't need to keep their board certification. But if they're going to take away his license because a third party, a private party, doesn't like his speech, the state of Georgia is violating their own constitution. Article 1, paragraph 5. No law shall be passed, curtail, or restrain the freedom of speech or of the press. Every person may speak, write, and publish statements on all subjects, but shall be responsible for the abuse of that liberty. See, freedom of speech is under attack in America. Now you say, what does this have to do with funny money? Well, there is a bit of a link to these. You see, it's the detachment from facts and reality. It's the government's doing what anyone else would be considered a crime. It's the manipulation of a system to put people under the thumb of government. whether it's the way the federal government taxes, uses money, borrows incredible amounts of money. The IRS want to collect biometric data. You've got countries trying to tell us how we should tax in violation of our own constitution. All the way down to states that are threatening people's livelihood, that wants to criminally charge them or simply deny them their license for challenging the status quo. Sure, Washington wants to challenge, you know, anybody that challenges an election. Georgia, you challenge the medical system and you can lose your license. How long before this, before challenging what Congress says is considered libelous and dangerous? That questioning an election is considered illegal speech. Questioning financial practices. Asking for an audit of the Fed. Asking Congress to justify their borrowing. See, Washington, the state of Washington, and the state of Georgia are giving us, I believe, a preview of what happens when people start realizing just how crooked and mafia-like Congress is with our money. And when people start questioning that, when people start pushing back on that, I believe we'll get the same response. We will see it considered misinformation. It'll be suppressed. It may even be made illegal. See, now is the time to rein in our employees in Washington. And we do that by moving power from the federal government to the states to the locals. You do that by making sure that your local government is protecting your rights. That includes your sheriff, any county officials. We need to protect ourselves from these out-of-control governments at the state and federal level. Now, you can find out more about my show and get all the latest podcasts. Go to AmericaOutLoud.com, look under shows or schedule, and you can help share the blessings of liberty to yourselves and your posterity.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.